On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Shu Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, I'm Shu Bartholomew, you're on the Commons. And joining us today, we have none other than Bill Davis. Bill is known to many of you out there, and he's got a rather unique story that he's going to be telling us. He's got a couple of aliases that some of you may or may not know about, and they kind of came back in sort of made life a little more interesting for him. Bill, thank you so much for joining us, or should I call you IC Delight?
I have used the name IC Delight as a screen name, yes.
Yeah.
IC Delight.
You see Delight, and many of us have been totally delighted with a lot of the stuff that you have written, so really pleased to have you join us. One of the things that happened, Bill, is that you were actually sued.
Yes.
For using a screen name and for writing on the internet.
Yes, I was.
And you want to tell us about it?
Well, sure. I started blogging. We had quite a few problems in our HOA, and it's managed by a well-known management company and organization tied to a Texas senator, and I started blogging about the business practices of that organization as they were being applied in our subdivision, as well as many other subdivisions, not just in Texas, but across the United States. And I started getting threat letters from Corona's organization, originally from in-house counsel and then from outhouse counsel, and that's what they are, is outhouse counsel. And
I like that.
They'd make these vague accusations claiming that the statements were defamatory, but they wouldn't say, well, what statements do they think was defamatory, and where were these statements posted, and when were these statements posted that they're complaining about? And ultimately, I continued to get these types of letters inviting me to contact him, or they were going to take legal action, only to find out last year that they had actually already filed suit in Dallas in what's called a, in Texas they have a pre-suit discovery provision, meaning that you can file a suit, your target is not a party to the suit, so they don't really get to defend themselves. And the purpose of this suit is to engage in some limited discovery in order to determine who you're going to sue. Well, they already knew who the target was because they had been sending me letters, okay, and threat letters. And very deceptive letters, by the way, since they were threatening suit, and in fact they had already filed this proceeding in Dallas. And what's interesting about the Dallas case is you're supposed to get the court's sign-off before you engage in discovery, but that's not the way this organization operated. They would try to compel people under threat of sanction to turn over documents without having court permission to even impose such a requirement on third parties. And in my case, they tried to do that with Yahoo. And when I found out about it, I engaged counsel to represent me as an interested party. Remember, this is an ex parte proceeding, which means that there's not an adversarial proceeding, but as I'm an interested party, John Doe, in that case I appeared as a John Doe, an interested party, and tried to quash the subpoenas that the management company was issuing, and we were quite successful in that. In fact, the judge gave a very scathing comment to the plaintiff in that case, and they told him he was going to rule against him, and before he entered his order, they dismissed the suit. About a month later, I was named personally in a suit in the county that I live in, and so that's been going on for about a year. And about 2 weeks ago, they dismissed it. So that's kind of the background. So ask away.
All right. Now, this you've had been through the courts twice. This was last year and again this year?
Right. Now, last year it was a pre-suit discovery proceeding. So I wasn't a party, But I still had to engage the counsel to represent my interests because these guys were going out collecting information about people who would say anything negative about the community association industry, attorneys, or the, in particular, the HOA management companies. And, you know, frankly, they couldn't, as the judge pointed out, there wasn't anything false about anything that was being said. They seemed to be disturbed about the fact that identifying who is behind much of this. That seemed to be their big complaint. And of course, that's really not something that they have a right to prevent people from discussing, particularly when it's a political figure.
All right, now let's go back and lay the scenario. You talk about a political figure, and that political figure is Senator John Carono.
Yes, that is correct.
Now, let's go back a number of years ago when I first got involved on the Internet and started doing the show. I heard from some folks in Texas urging me to interview Senator Carono, or he was the congressman at the time, or whatever you call, assemblyman, delegate, whatever you call him in Texas. But he apparently was going to be writing laws to protect the homeowners. From what I understand at the time, he was the only legislator who was actually proposing and carrying laws that would regulate, allegedly would regulate homeowner associations. We then discovered that he owned a management company, and
yes,
this management company grew tremendously over the years.
Yes.
I did try to call him once. I never did manage to connect with him. I because everybody in Texas thought that, hey, you know, he's the one who's going to be protecting us, protecting the homeowners. But in essence, for years and years and years, he's the only one who actually proposed legislation regulating, allegedly regulating associations. Now we find out that he's got this absolutely humongous management company that sort of seems to be reaching across state lines and gobbling up other ones. I mean, he associates grown and grown and grown.
Right. It's actually more than a management company. If you read, you'll have to read, and maybe we can do this on the show, his description of what he does. It's actually very equivocally stated at best. It highly misrepresents what his actual business is. But Associa is a holding company for a large number of HOA-related businesses. And they're all, you know, pretty much directed and controlled by him. And it involves banking, insurance, the HOA management, resale certificates, various phone-related services, and quite a few other things. And it's not just in Texas. It's in Texas and many other states across the U.S.
Including Virginia.
Including Virginia, yes.
Including Virginia. Right here it says, Plaintiffs Associations, Inc., doing business as Associa,
yes.
Principal Management Group, Inc., and Alliance Association Management, Inc., hereinafter collectively referred to as Associa, or plaintiffs.
Yes, well, that was kind of the first little deceptive bit, because you're never sure whether they're talking about Associations, Inc., or one of the management companies throughout the rest of the petition. But, yes, that's it.
Well, you talked about subpoenas. I got one.
You did? Oh, that's right, in this case, didn't you?
I got one in this case, absolutely. I got one because I'm a guest blogger on Privatopia. That's the blog that's owned by Professor Evan McKenzie, who's well-known, and also Fred Pilot, who's also another guest blogger. The three of us actually received notices that Google had been served with subpoenas wanting the information.
Yes.
And that sort of, I know Evan posted that on the website and said, all right, here it is. But the thing was, nobody knew exactly what it was they were looking for.
The whole thing was kind of, the whole process, if you look at it from 30,000 feet, seemed to be primarily an attempt at intimidation. And the pre-suit discovery process the prior year was an intimidation tactic. You know, ooh, we find out who you are, we're going to sue the bejibbers out of you. And, you know, the funny thing is when there was actually a counsel there representing their target, they lost every motion and every hearing. I mean, it's really just kind of appalling. And they followed it up with another lawsuit where they lost every motion and continue to have problems with their pleadings. But yes, it's really largely an intimidation tactic. But Shu, you know, they claim, what did they claim in this? They alleged defamation and, you know, the business disparagement and things like this. And all I can tell you is that truth is an absolute defense to defamation claim. Because for defamation, it has to be false statements. And it's even a higher threshold for the cause of action when you're dealing with a political figure or a political issue. But that's what's kind of funny about this, is they couldn't really ever point to anything that wasn't true. You know, that was the fundamental flaw with their complaint.
I don't think they expected you to defend yourself. Because, you know, I'll tell you, Bill, you're not the only one who's been threatened with a lawsuit. You're the only one I know of that's been threatened by a senator, which is totally ridiculous. But there have been other homeowners who have been threatened.
Oh, sure.
By management companies, by associations, by legal firms, and they've always been threatened with a lawsuit for $1 million.
Right.
And that's, ironically, that's the same amount that you allegedly caused him damage.
Well, that's what they, just to be clear, you know, he's the one that's behind this, but he's suing through Associations,
yeah.
Inc. Yeah. And so he's claiming that's a private entity that's been privately harmed and things like that. But he didn't start off with the $1 million number. They only put that number on there after they were, you know, all the defects in their pleading were pointed out. I mean, they were all over the place. They were seeking a prohibition against any future speech. They had done something like this before, where they didn't want you to ever talk about associate or its directors or officers.
I thought that was interesting.
Isn't that interesting? You got a senator who's up there writing self-serving laws for his businesses, but by golly, if you dare talk about it to anyone, you know, that you should be held in contempt for violating an injunction. You know, and you shouldn't be able to be associates should be able to enjoin you from talking about Senator Corona and his business practices. Come on.
There was something in one of your pleadings, and I just loved it. And I'm trying to find it now, because if you don't have it, I would like to read it.
Is it in?
It's the 1920 case that you cited.
Oh, yes.
Do you have that in front of you?
No? I don't, but I don't know if that was in a pleading or in a separate comment I sent to you. But
no, it was in a pleading.
Okay.
And so I'm going to, I did highlight, if I can find it, keep talking, because when I find it, I'm going to interrupt you, and I'm going to read it, because I really, really like that.
All righty. Well, let's see, what else was odd about this? The Dallas court, there's two cases here, but in the Dallas case, you know, the transcript of that was kind of interesting, because the judge, who's a political figure, these are elected judges, had no idea that Senator Corona was the person behind Associa. Here he is in Dallas and had no idea that that was Senator Corona. So that was news even to the judge, and the judge found it a value.
Oh, really?
Know. Yes, yes. And then the judge went on to kind of a soliloquy, I think that might be the term, and we haven't even raised this issue. We didn't try arguing that HOAs and their powers were a political issue. We were mainly arguing that Senator Corona was a political figure. And the judge himself introduced the whole point that the HOAs, the powers that they have, are a political issue. The legislature has been dealing with them for the last several years. They had been dealing with them during the interim session. I mean, Texas, the Texas House, the legislature only meets 140 days every 2 years. And they do plenty of damage at that time.
They manage that. Kind
oh,
of
they do. I mean, they do. He's a perfect example. And, you know, his legislation didn't really regulate HOAs. It regulated homeowners and limited what rights homeowners had.
Yeah.
And gave all sorts of powers to the HOAs and primarily their managing agents, you know,
right.
His organization.
And we're going to talk about some of those, by the way.
Okay. And to revisit another point you had, you know, they like to claim that Associations, Inc. has been around for 30 years. It hasn't. It was formed in 2001, the same year that he formed misnamed Texas Property Owners Protection Act. And he did that on the heels. He used the Winona Blevins incident in Houston, where, you know, you had the 80-something-year-old widow whose house was taken away from her by a CAI law firm, over $800 assessments or whatever it was. And she, of course, you know how the homes are targeted. They love the ones that have 100% equity or large amounts of equity in them. Well, she owned hers outright. So, of course, she was a sitting duck for these this stuff.
Yeah.
And he used that. That garnered a lot of national outrage. And he used that to float this Texas Property Owners Protection Act. A lot of people didn't know the ties between him and the organization. Or, you know, you have to read the law that he authored that time to realize just how ludicrous for anyone to tout what that law was. When you closely look at it, Shu, it was a backdoor invitation to allow these entities to engage in private fining. The notice and due process provision basically provided that the homeowner would not get notice for any of the types of things that an HOA would typically pursue in a lawsuit, like if they were seeking an injunction, if they were seeking to foreclose or anything. They didn't have to provide any notice to the homeowner. I mean, those were specifically accepted. So guess what? Every HOA attorney would include in their lawsuit. They'd include an order for foreclosure or seeking that as a remedy. And, you know, now, and it did two things. One, it exempted them from the notice provisions and, the falsely named due process provisions. That's just such a ludicrous thing to claim you have due process with a private corporation. It's just not even, it's just not even worthy of discussion. But, another provision in that act was the concept of management certificates. And it's my opinion when you read it, it was really a means for him to force his competitors to identify themselves, and all he had to do was go to the county clerk's office, figure out who his competitors were and who they represented, and some, that was a way of valuing them as well. I mean, you know, you look at this thing, and this was a Senator Corona Business Practices Protection Act is what it was. We hopefully have had some changes to that with the great help this year of a wonderful individual by the name of Texas, of Robert Doggett, who's normally works with the Texas Rural Legal Assistance, but there were quite a few changes to HOA law this past year in Texas, and a lot more to come.
Well, I found that bit, by the way, Bill. So
I'm
going to read it. And this is from a lawsuit case that you cited from a 1920 case that says there can be no justification for the utterance of a slander. But there is no power in courts to make one person speak only well of another. I mean, I just love that. The Constitution leaves him free to speak well or ill. And if he wrongs another by abusing this privilege, he is responsible in damages.
Yes.
I like that.
Well, that wasn't one of our pleadings, and I wasn't sure which statement you were referring to until now. But, you know, what's funny is they claim to be number one, and by golly, they'll sue anybody who says otherwise. And so that's you know, this is how the message gets out there, is to make sure that only their message is the one that is out there.
But the other thing, Bill, is that, you know, the industry will tell you that this is democracy up close and personal, that it's the first step in democracy, and this is something that we have to maintain. But by golly, if you say anything that somebody doesn't like or takes exception to, they'll have you in court faster than you can say Jack Rabbit, and
right,
they'll sue you for $1 million, or
right,
they'll try to sue you for $1 million.
That democracy claim is a continued false representation the industry makes. They make it in everything from petitions they file with the SEC to friends of the court briefs that they file in almost every case. Actually, there's some statements in their original petition here you might get a kick out of. It's paragraphs 8 and 9. Look at this. Associate is in the unique business. Unique. They claim it's unique.
Yeah.
Of managing community associations, such as homeowner associations and condominium buildings.
Yeah. I saw that.
Okay.
I highlighted that. Unique. What's so unique about it?
Well, it isn't. And then, you know, they go on and on there. But in paragraph 9, they say the community association industry is very competitive.
Yes. Oh,
and that an associate must work hard to maintain its business reputation, mm-hmm, and earn goodwill. Well, if it's so unique, then how can it possibly be so competitive? I mean, these just don't seem to be, you know, compatible. It's paradoxical at best. Just reading their petition, they had lots of problems with their petition, Shu, and we tried to get them to fix it for nearly a year. They refused, and we filed what's called a motion for special exceptions. It's where you after the other side has been uncooperative, you ask the court to force them to fix their pleadings. And so we filed a motion for special exceptions because they were trying to get, for example, they did fix one or two of these before the motion was heard, but they were demanding attorney's fees in the case you can't get attorney's fees. They were demanding a prohibition against me speaking. They wanted an injunction to prohibit me from speaking about Associa, and that's constitutionally prohibited. And imagine if they're doing this in the courtroom, what they're trying to do in the context of a private corporation where
right.
they're running the show.
Right.
At any rate, they lost on everything on the special exceptions. You know, they didn't previously indicate the damages they were seeking. Of course, they didn't want to turn over their books and records during the discovery to show whether they'd had any harm or what their financials were. They just like to make these claims. But again, if you look at it from 30,000 feet, it was always about intimidation. They couldn't prove up
control.
Any of these things.
Fear, control, intimidation.
Yeah.
It's always the same thing. We're talking to Bill Davis. Bill is an attorney in Texas who was actually sued for trying to help educate homeowners in what really was going on. And I guess the problem was that you used an alias, but I'm sure that they would have sued you regardless of what name you posted under, because they didn't seem to like it. They sort of objected to comments that you made, like Alliance is known for the priority of payment scam.
Yes.
Trying to usurp board powers, directing all vendors to management company affiliates.
Yes.
Secrecy of records. Oh my gosh, I see delight. How did you do that?
Well, truth is a defense. I can come back to truth is a defense.
You know, anybody just checking the news periodically, or go to Privatopia, there's a lot of good information over there. You'll see tons and tons and tons of articles there. And the ones that are missing right now are a lot of the things that are going on in
Nevada,
Las Vegas.
Yes.
The corruption is just unbelievable. But you know what, Bill? That's going on all over the place.
It is.
It's going on all over the place. Nevada's the only place that's actually getting any kind of interest from the feds. But that's going on pretty much all over.
Yes.
Now, before the end of the case, they made an offer to settle, which I found kind of intriguing and amusing. And tell us what happened with that.
Well, I'm not completely up to speed on any full offers of settlement or anything like that. But what I can tell you, just skipping past the settlement part, what they wanted me to do was to sit in and listen to them give me a pitch to correct my misperceptions about community associations. And I kind of laughed. I'm speaking to my attorney. I said, I don't get it, and he didn't either. And I said, I listened to that marketing pitch during the legislative session all year long. I said, I wasn't brainwashed then. I don't know why anything would change now and how things are different. And I spoke to a very wise lady that's in the Virginia area, and she recommended.
Gee, I wonder who that could be.
And she had a great idea that since there's so many people that have this misperception about community associations, maybe we should record it for the benefit of all those other people. I mean, why waste all these resources,
Absolutely.
If you're going to have these leaders and community associations tell you what you're... I know I relayed that to my attorney, and all I can tell you is we didn't have the sit-down discussion. So
they weren't that interested. They wanted to do it one person at a time, right?
Apparently so. Those isolated instances that... seem to be unlimited in number and yes.
All of those, yeah. So that never happened then?
No. I'm not sure I could have sat through it, Sue. I mean, it's the same stuff they say over and over that's false. I mean, I don't even see how they can say it with a straight mouth. I mean, a straight face. It's just, It's just as false as it can be. It's these little marketing pitches they have, these little quips that are equivocal at best. And I can say, did you know, you knew I was deposed during this process, right?
Right.
Well, one of the things that was interesting was, I mean, remember, they're the plaintiff. But I got the feeling throughout the entire deposition that they were the defendant, because their questions kept going along the lines of, you know, you could tell they had two lines of theories, that we're no worse than, that everybody else in the industry does it, you know, like we're no worse than anybody else in the industry, or there's nothing illegal about this, you know, or, you know, that type of a thing is like, this isn't illegal. And I'm like, well,
How about immoral?
I said it was unscrupulous, and they had a problem with that, apparently. I said it was unscrupulous and unethical. They don't like that.
Oh.
They don't like that.
How about immoral? I mean,
yeah, I don't think I actually said that, but they really seem to focus on, you know, or I guess one other theory was that it's the board members. We're just following the board members' instructions. I guess that's it. We're just following the board members. It's like, yeah, except the only thing in common between all these HOAs is your management company, and yet they have the same forms, same results, same playbook, and these homeowners are largely gullible, not educated about your industry. I mean, to me, this is like, con men with pigeons, and then blaming everything on the victim. I mean, that's the way I saw it, anyway. But it was kind of humorous to me. We're no worse than anybody else in the industry, or oh yes, the board members.
These board members who don't seem to know beans about anything.
Right.
I mean, they may be brilliant, they may be brain surgeons in their real lives, but when it comes to actually trying to decipher all these stupid laws that we've got on the books across the country.
Well, it's laws, and it's also the closed, you know, the management company gets in there, and I mean, the industry as a whole has promoted a lack of any disclosure, a lack of any type of open meetings, lack of a right to vote. I it's amazing to me that they tout these as the epitome of democracy, and yet they lobby so hard to make sure they could be anything but. And I mean, they're not exactly fond of a democratic environment. You know, this year, it's only starting September the 1st of this year that homeowners have a right to vote in Texas for the board members in these things, or a right to actually, they don't have the right to vote until January the 1st of next year. They didn't have the right to run for office until this year. And so you'd have these boards that are controlled by the management companies, and they dictate the outcome of every election. I mean, it's happening everywhere. It's still happening now, you know.
In Texas, you didn't have the right to vote for your board members?
No. No, the board could decide. And guess who counts the vote? Management company.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I think it was Stalin that said, it isn't he that casts the votes that counts, it's he who counts the votes. That is all, is everything. He who casts the vote determines nothing. He who counts the vote determines everything. And guess who counts the votes? But, yeah, you had no right to vote, and the secret process made sure you didn't even know if your vote counted or not. I mean, there's still lots of problems with this process, but, you know, it's starting to change a little bit.
You know, Bill, I've seen it change, and you get some agents of change who'll come on and they'll do something, but it doesn't last long because it always seems to get reversed. There's always a tweaking.
Yeah.
And you've got the industry whose main career, main job, that's what they do for a living, 9 to 5. That's what they get paid for.
Yeah.
And so what you have is the homeowners who do have other jobs, who do have families, who are then taking time away from all of their other commitments and trying to work with, you know, trying to protect their property and to protect their rights. And it just, you know, you'll find some dedicated people, and you'll find people who will really work hard and who will really try to get something going and get done, and they'll get it done. But the next year when they go back to their real lives, guess what? The industry's right back in there, and it's just tweaking it. It might be just removing a comma, and nobody really notices.
Right.
And it's all back to square one. I think, I'm not sure that The legislative fix is a proper fix. I'm not even sure the courts are a proper fix.
Yeah, I think this is kind of a fundamental structural problem of having local government being able to operate through corporations and therefore deprive you of any types of all sorts of rights that the local government would otherwise have to respect with respect to you. And, of course, that's an ample opportunity for the unscrupulous private organizations, the management companies and the attorneys, to move in and just, you know, go to town on all the homeowners that are in these abominations. And I know if we can avoid it, we'll never move into one again, and we're certainly teaching our children that and as many other people as we can. And we can give, you know, examples of what happened in our case. And how many myths can this organization tell? And people still believe them. You know, HOAs preserve property value. That's got to be myth number one. You know, I mean, where? In fact, I suspect it's HOA burden property is going to, if you look at the whole real estate crash, I'll bet you the HOA property is the biggest component of that.
I just heard from someone, their HOA is looking at filing bankruptcy, and I think some of the members would like to disband it, but it's not going to benefit the local municipal government, so there's going to be a pushback from the government.
Yeah.
The only way to do it is to just ignore the association and not have anyone run for the board, not have anyone try to do anything. But then you find some little Miss Goody Two Shoes or whoever who comes on and decides, oh, Bill Davis has got a red door, and that just is not right. And we've got an association here that we've really got to revive. So when they all of the covenants are there, so all they have to do is resuscitate that.
Right, that's a problem. And even the so-called democracy, there's this idea that majority rules determines everything is just foolish. That's not what this, if you want to talk about pool hours, that's fine, but if you want to talk about what you can do on your property, that's not. The corporation doesn't own your property, and neither do any of the other homeowners. That's been a silly idea for a long time, and there is starting to be pushback on that. That's what people are seeing in the Armstrong case in 2006, and there's a number of other courts that have started citing the Armstrong case as well. That's the North Carolina case, where they're trying to convert a non-HOA development into an HOA development, and then the HOA is just used to clean out all the homeowners. Take away all their property for the benefit of the vendors, the management companies, and the attorneys.
You have that going on in Arizona. You have two
yes.
of those going on in Virginia. You had one in, was it Colorado or Idaho that I heard about from one of the homeowners who was fighting that? Beanie Adolph, who's a very active homeowner advocate.
Yes.
Got involved in this because she found out what associations were all about. She's never lived in one.
Right, and the industry and the city of Houston has been trying to get an HOA in her subdivision for quite some time, and the city of Houston is even promoting and offering pro bono attorney services for converting existing neighborhoods into HOA neighborhoods without the consent of the homeowners. In fact, they've got this flow chart because the Texas laws, and you know who wrote those, there's one that purports to allow a group of individuals to impose an HOA on someone else's property who never agreed to it, didn't consent it, and supposedly under this law, that homeowner has no ability to opt out of it. It's like, come on, this is ripe for challenge. And
how can they do that, Bill?
Well, the homeowner, you clearly have a vendor industry that's had the ear of the legislature, and it didn't hurt when you had Senator Corona is in there. He is the arm of the industry sitting right there at the legislature and promoting this legislation, and it didn't have much opposition because people, the typical homeowner didn't know what was going on. And it's a pretty high burden for the homeowner to have to hire counsel to challenge a statute like that as being unconstitutional, either under U.S. or Texas state law. And so, it's just creating a very, very unlevel playing field is how this industry has largely operated.
Isn't that a taking under the Takings Clause?
Well, they'll claim that it's a private corporation.
That's something you agreed to beforehand, not if they're coming in retroactively and imposing it on you.
Well, in my, you know, to me, that's a conversion or a theft. That's not a, you know, taking is what you have against the government. These aren't governments. These are private corporations.
But if the government is making the laws, there's state action. There's the point.
State action. Yeah, I think there needs to be challenges to that, and I believe Beanie has vowed to challenge that if they try to do it in hers. But, you know, all they had to do, the way the industry in the city has worked is very, very deceptively. They go around with a petition, because that's how this process starts in Texas. And it's a beautify the neighborhood petition. That's what the, you know, don't you want to beautify the neighborhood? I mean, how you know, why don't you sign this petition? And they don't realize they're signing a petition to create an HOA in the neighborhood. And that's the last thing that HOA is going to do. You're going to end up having a ghetto afterwards, because you can look at story after story after in Houston where entire subdivisions have just been economically devastated by management companies, or even local politicians who decided they wanted that for a new development. You know, there's been condos like the Landing that have been wiped out in Houston and several other Park Memorial in Houston. Right on Memorial Parkway, and you know, how can that, you know, or Aldine Village, that was another case where the management company, you know the one, claims that there had been no board for 5 years, and they just suddenly disappeared. Do you think the homeowners had access to the books and records at that point in time? And how can this management company be doing anything if there hadn't been a board of directors for 5 years? It sounds to me like there shouldn't have been an HOA if there was no board of directors, and how can anyone claim that they want these things if you know people don't want the HOA don't want to have a board of directors or anything else, and yet you keep hearing these myths. Oh, people love them, people want them.
People are terrified because people have been told that an HOA will protect them and protect their property values. There's no basis in fact on any of those claims.
Right.
And, you know, it's unfortunate that people never question that.
Well, they hadn't been, but I think that's changed a lot. But, you know, if you're in an industry, how come after 30 years you can't have any empirical evidence to support your position? You know, that's really should say it all right there.
Actually, there was back when I first got involved in all of this back in the late 80s,
yes,
about 89, 90, somewhere in there, we started an organization here in, it's no longer in existence, in Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. called Council for Homeowner Rights. And one of our members, David Root, did a study, and he looked at a lot of the existing, back then we didn't have quite so many HOAs, and we did have non-HOA housing. A lot of that has disappeared because they've just torn it all down and replaced it with, you know, smart growth type of housing instead, and of course it's all in an HOA. But his conclusion was that HOA property was less valuable even back then.
Yes.
Than non-HOA, non-controlled housing.
Yes.
Unfortunately, people have been spoon-fed all kinds of nonsense and told, oh, yeah, we want walkable communities. All right, out with the old housing. Now we have an HOA. Now we have a walkable community, which means you can only walk to one grocery store who can charge you anything you want, they want, and you're kind of stuck.
But, well, you've actually pointed out something else that I've been harping upon, in especially some of the newer ones. It is about complete monopolization.
Yes.
And it really raises some antitrust issues, because you just talked about there will only be one store. Well, guess what happens when not only is there only one store, but now they mandate that you're only allowed to shop at that store. The store example is a little harder, but what's happening to us and people in many other areas is they try to force them to use one telecom provider. They force them to use one internet service provider.
Mm-hmm.
They force them to buy water from a particular source.
Right.
They force them to get propane, which is not economically regulated in many states. they force it, and so the homeowner doesn't know it, you know, but it's like, well, that's odd. Why do you have a restrictive covenant that requires you to have gas appliances? I mean, if it's a better thing, then surely the people would want to use it, but when you find out that you're being required to use it because someone gets a kickback, because you're going to be forced to buy gas from a particular provider, namely the one that the HOA board decides or that the developer decides, and then all of a sudden, you know, this doesn't sound like a very something that anybody would want. And it's the type of agreement that usually isn't recognized as being an enforceable agreement, except they're using the HOAs to enforce them.
Well, so many, especially in condos, you know, where when you buy into those things and you've got your condo fees, I mean, they include, some of them include utilities, some of them include cable, and they include internet.
Yes.
Not everybody wants cable, not everybody has a computer, but everybody is forced to do that. So
yes.
When you have a situation, an economic downturn like we're experiencing now, and you have a lot of delinquencies, all of a sudden, everybody's, well, you know, you're not paying your fair share over here to provide me with my, you know, my cable service and my internet service. So I think those need to be unbundled.
Agreed.
Yeah, I know you agree.
It's about forced consumption, and that's, you know, forced consumption from particular vendors especially. I mean, our bylaws were actually amended after the associate organization was involved. Our bylaws were amended to make it require a unanimous vote of the board of directors to change away from Alliance Association Management, which was the local management company, which was, the management companies are subsidiaries, and they're generally in different regional areas, and that's who it was in this region. It's just like, why would anybody specifically name that vendor in bylaws? The bylaws are supposed to be about running the HOA, not about who you're going to use for a particular vendor. And it specifically named a law firm and specifically named the management company. It was just ridiculous. We noticed that after the laws changed that allows you to run for office, you know, they can't stop you from running for office. So what did they do? They eliminated there used to be a lot more positions available for people to run for. This year they decided to make those all appointed by the board, and the law, now that you can't decide who gets to run for the board, the law, what they did is they made it so that only board positions could be elected, and they didn't exactly inform people, you know, of that little change to the law. I don't think the management companies really want to make that real well known. And so now, for example, the architectural committee, you can't have any input on who that is or all these other committee positions that were previously elected. So it's still trying to retain as much power as possible in the board is what it's doing. And control who's on that board.
Well, that's always been the name of the game.
Yeah.
Even back when I ran for the board, I mean, there was a huge campaign against me.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I wasn't anywhere near as caustic then as I am now. But I did get on the board, so it didn't work. Yeah, we changed things for a while now, unless I wanted to make a career of being an unpaid board member, which I certainly didn't. But
no.
You know, and that's the problem, you know. It's like a ping pong game. It's watching the ball go from one side of the court to the other side of the court and back again. Right now, and we'll be talking about that at one point, but right now there's been a lawsuit that the homeowner won in my association, and so all of the things we told them years and years and years ago that they couldn't do, now they've got a court order not to do. So it's cost us a lot of money to go to court, but we'll be hearing about it. We'll talk about it at another time when the time is ready, but again,
well, wait, who else won besides the homeowner? That's the point that nobody ever catches. The homeowner won, but who else won? The HOA attorney. That's who won. Yeah.
Well, you know, our attorney did tell them that they would lose the case, and they did tell the association, don't even go there because you're not going to win.
Yeah. But they did anyway, right?
They got another firm. They got another law firm to do that. We will be. I've got all the transcripts. I've got all of that stuff, and all of that stuff will be made available one of these days when I'm at liberty to do so, and I will just let people draw their own conclusions. It's always fun to do that.
Okay,
Bill, back to the lawsuit. Now, you won, and then they came in and filed another case against you?
Well, what they did is they dismissed the first case. Remember, I wasn't a party in the first case, and they were trying to get information from Yahoo, trying to compel Yahoo to produce the information, personal information about me, without a court order. In fact, they were trying to command Yahoo to produce it before the hearing, the court is going to determine whether they have a right to ask Yahoo to do that. I mean, this is the way this organization operates. And they never really stopped behaving badly at any step of the process. But what happened in that first case was the judge basically told them, this is a public issue, it's a public figure, I haven't seen anything in any statement you've provided up. But by the way, that when the original petition, they claimed there was an appendix A, B, C, D, and E or something like that, and then they'd have a little asterisk, and they wouldn't include the appendices, and they would say that we'll show this to the court in camera. It's like, look, if you made a defamatory statement, you're going to have to reveal what the statement is at some point, or if your claim is that it's defamatory, you're going to have to put it before the court. You can't say, well, they made a defamatory statement about me, and I don't want to tell anybody about it yet, but they did, Your Honor. You have to take our word for it. This is their attitude. It's absolutely ridiculous. And fortunately, it was a court of law, not the HOA kangaroo court that they run. But the judge in that case indicated that he was leaning towards ruling against them as we got towards the end of that process, that he saw nothing defamatory about any of the statements made. We are dealing with a public figure and a public issue. He was going to give them an additional 5 days to brief the issue of public figure. They worked so hard to keep Senator Corona's name out of it. They claimed, oh, he was just a mere stockholder. You know, this is a private company. And the judge kind of railed on them about that. That, you know, well, he's the founder, the director, officer, chairman, you know, he went down the list of things and pointed out that he's more than that, and also pointed out he's also a legislator writing laws about, you know, HOA, so he's fair game. And they dismissed the case right after that. In Texas, you have an absolute right to dismiss. We didn't have any counterclaims against them at that time. We weren't party to the suit. It's an ex parte proceeding.
Okay, this is the one last year.
That's the one last year. And then a month later, they filed a suit naming me personally. A couple of other things that's interesting. They alleged I had accused them of a crime, and what's really funny, they claimed that they had been operating as a socia for 30 years, which wasn't true, but they had been operating as a socia for several years, and they even had their PR person get up and testify to that. They didn't register the name. Associa is an assumed name, and one of the things that made it so difficult to tie it into Senator Corona until the last couple of years is because he's been operating for years without registering his assumed name, which is a criminal offense. It's a misdemeanor. It's a Class A misdemeanor. Okay, he didn't register it with the Secretary of State. He only registered it after he filed the first lawsuit last year. I mean, the one earlier in the year last year. And in Texas, if you're operating under an assumed name, there's certain types of entities, like corporations, that have to file both with the Secretary of State and the county that's their principal place of business. Well, we put them on notice of this last year, and they filed suit against me personally at the end of last year, and we got to point out, you know, you guys still haven't registered the assumed name Associa in Dallas County, which is your headquarters. And I find that this is the way this guy operates. You know, he has these organizations, operates under assumed names. It makes it very difficult to find out, unregistered assumed names, by the way, makes it difficult to find out who is, who's behind this. And,
So I'm talking about this year. Because you actually went through the court, you were deposed, you did the whole thing, and then you kept asking them to amend their pleadings because there were a lot of problems with it.
Yes.
And they filed something on one day, and then the following day, they non-suited it without prejudice. What's going on?
Well, good question. You have to realize that Senator Cronin is running for office again. I mean, number one, and so he probably didn't want any more. Realized that he didn't want any bad press during his campaign. But I mean, they were losing every hearing, and they were never able to point to anything false or defamatory. There was a motion for special exceptions that I mentioned before, where we pointed out the defects in their pleading. And since they wouldn't fix them after we asked them to several times, we had a hearing on it and asked the court to command them to fix it. And the court did. And the court told them they weren't allowed to seek an injunction prohibiting me from speaking about Associa, okay, or Alliance, or Principal Management Group. They weren't allowed to seek attorney's fees. They weren't allowed to have some vague number out there without an indication of how it's calculated or what the economic damages were. There's a number of these things. So they were ordered to fix that. So on November the 21st, they filed a third amendment pleading, and they fixed some of them. They did not address the court's order. They fixed a couple of them. They still had some serious problems with it. But then the very next day, they filed a notice of non-suit. Now, what do you think happened between the 21st and the 22nd? I don't know. I think it was an exercise in attorney billing, because if they knew they were going to non-suit, why do you waste your time filing an amended pleading? Unless you're trying to get in a few extra hours before you're going to lose the client. I don't know. The whole thing, when you look at it, it's clearly an exercise in intimidation, and they didn't really have a game plan. After when they weren't able to force a here, let's sit down and you agree never to talk about the senator or his business practices again, when that didn't work, they didn't really have anywhere to go. There was nothing defamatory.
So but by non-suiting without prejudice, they can't actually come back and refile that if they want to. They can try, but
this lawsuit was one of the examples given to the state legislature this year as to why Texas needs an anti-SLAPP lawsuit. So if they file again, we're going to come up with a counterclaim under the new Texas anti-SLAPP lawsuit. And SLAPP, of course, stands for Strategic Litigation Against Public Participation. Deep-pocketed companies and political figures use to try and intimidate people to ensure that the news doesn't actually get out. It's how they control the information flow, is they intimidate people to prevent them from speaking about them. But there's a new Texas statute that provides for the defendant, the target in these things, to have a claim for attorney's fees and to seek rapid dismissal against the plaintiffs. And so if he does it again,
you're telling him what your strategy is, right?
Well, these people, when you look at what they did, they never really followed the law before. It's almost like they went to a continuing legal education class. Attorneys have to seek continuing legal education every year. You have to get a certain number of hours, at least in this state you do.
Yep.
And it's like they went to a CLE course on everything wrong to do. And when you look at it in hindsight, this wasn't about competent legal representation. It was about using a lawyer to try to intimidate somebody is what it was.
Clearly that's what it was. And that's what I told you when you first told me about it. I said, I think they've picked the wrong person here.
Well, the good news is I hope other people stand up for the challenge of Associa. I'm still puzzled as to what exactly it is that their complaint is about. I think one of the concerns they have is that maybe people didn't know, number one, there was Corona behind this. Number two, they didn't realize the management company was steering them to all these affiliated businesses of Associa. As far as they knew, these were arm's-length entities. And this is a real concern when you're dealing with insurance and banking, when you think that they're arm's-length entities, and they aren't really, because now all of a sudden, the management company isn't necessarily just the custodian that it likes to claim that it is of the records. It very well has an incentive to alter the records, and it may not be any type of, when they appear in court, all of a sudden there's now another potential for bias for the management company. I know in our case, it's my opinion that a management company lied through its teeth, their representative did, and I can tell you that the jury didn't buy their story or any of the other? I'm talking about our HOA lawsuit, which is a whole nother.
It's a different story. We're running out of time, Bill. You said we didn't have enough information to talk for this long. I told you my money was on you. One very quick question. They demanded a jury trial. Did they get it?
You have a right to a jury trial. Actually, we could have demanded a jury trial. That's just the procedural requirement. That they can have one if they want one.
Did they?
But there was no trial.
No trial, okay.
You're right, because they dismissed the case. I mean, they didn't want to go to trial.
Okay.
That's why they didn't have a case. They dismissed it. I mean, I would have loved to have a jury. I would have loved to inform as many people as possible. And you know what? Try and find a jury that hasn't been affected by this trade group or perhaps this management company.
I know. In the voir dire section, they were going to go, yeah, well, you know. How many people are going to go HOA, huh?
Oh, I'd love them to say, oh, they're the epitome of democracy, you know? Yeah,
uh-huh. Yeah. Bill, thank you. Thank you for standing up to this. I mean, I knew you would, and my money has always been on you.
Well, thanks for getting the word out. I think more people need to know. I've noticed on the forum that I was blogging on, or where I was telling, you know, what happened in our HOA and the management company and things like that, the realtors had been just very aggressive in the past about attacking anyone who wanted non-HOA property. Oh, why would you want that?
Yeah.
I mean, clearly they were, you know, this was this force. And I'm happy to say that it took a couple of years, but now it has really switched, and you don't see people getting attacked like they were, and people are more willing to ask for it and to not give up on a fundamental property attribute like that. They don't want it to be in an HOA. There's nothing advantage about it, and people shouldn't be ashamed of asking for that, and they shouldn't be bullied for it. And perhaps we'll see MLS start changing to where people can actually search for non-HOA property instead of hiding whether it's involved in an HOA or not, which is what happens here.
Thank you, Bill. Good luck.
Thanks.
I'm really excited about that, and I hope...
The Texas what will cover it?
Papers, newspapers?
I don't know. I haven't... this is an exclusive as far as I know, Shu.
All right. So I'm glad to have you on. Bill, thank you so much.
Thank you, Shu.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.